The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lenox, Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app, which is free to download, by the way. And also on cable channel 1301, Access Pittsfield. Sean Serry, your host here this morning. Thanks for being here. Thursday, September 3rd is your date. 3 days into September already, you're waking up and seeing some gray skies out there, a little bit of rain overnight. Sounds like we're going to have a chance of shower today, tomorrow, and then the rest of the Labor Day weekend upcoming is going to be very nice, I hear. I've got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to flip the tables a little bit. You may have gotten used to Bill Sturgeon, the alumni host here at Morning Drive, if we are kind, and he is on the other side of the table this morning talking about his most recent book, and it's called Youth at Risk. And we're going to talk to Bill about how he got into the process of writing this book, what the background of it is, and what he hopes the outcomes for that will be. So looking forward to that discussion with Bill in just a moment. First, let's do the weather forecast from the National Weather Service and see what they say we have in plans for the weather today. Here goes.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, showers likely. Near steady temperature in the lower 60s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Chance of rain 70%. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon. Humid with highs in the upper 70s. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour, becoming west in the afternoon. Chance of rain 50%. Thursday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, so just a chance of showers today. Not too bad. It's been a wet couple of days for sure. And we kind of, I think that's the transition that we feel coming from summer to fall, right? We usually have a stretch of days like that that just feel like fall. And then we know that we're making that transition, but maybe not. We still have a little bit of summer left in us. And just so you know, Pittsfield Community Television is turning 40 this year. Yes, we are. And we're inviting you to join the celebration. PCTV's 40th anniversary celebration is on Friday, September 18th at Berkshire Hills Country Club, just over a couple weeks from now. That's starting at 6 p.m. up at Berkshire Hills. Enjoy an evening of food, fun, and dancing. The tickets are available at $50, and the event will also feature a keynote address from WTEN's Ryan Peterson. You can go to pittsfieldtv.org for tickets and more information. So again, that's 40th anniversary for PCTV and WTBR-FM on Friday, September 18th at the Berkshire Hills Country Club. We hope to see you there. It's been a long, strange trip here for PCTV, I guess you could say, and we've been serving the community for that amount of time, and that's just a lot of years and a lot of time, and a lot of people that we've touched, and a lot of lives that have changed. People have come through our doors and learned how to do television, provided programming for the community. It's a great thing, and we're going to celebrate that. Bill Sturgeon, good morning.
Good morning there. How are you, handsome?
Yeah, you know, hanging in there after a late night, I will say.
Yeah.
And the reason I had a late night is because I saw the fantastic Tedeschi Trucks Band last night at Tanglewood. Sat out on the lawn. The rain held off. It was just a perfect night, and the Tedeschi Trucks Band was absolutely fantastic.
Well, I'm happy for you.
And we're lucky to have Tanglewood and all these opportunities here in the Berkshires. I wish it was more than just the summer, but, you know, it's a very special experience going down and enjoying a concert outside.
I always refer to it on Sunday afternoons when we would go down. I'd get land on the lawn. Is a decompression chamber because it is. We're very fortunate. We have Berkshire Theater Group. They've had some wonderful plays and performances this summer. Mm-hmm. Barrington Stage, you have Williamstown. It's a cultural kind of haven.
Yeah.
And
we forget about that sometimes.
Yeah,
and,
I think you know, we do.
But very lucky to have it for sure.
We just had Chorus Girl at the Barrington State. Chorus yep. Line, I'm yep. sorry. Yep. But it's just an amazing summer. It has been an amazing mm-hmm. summer, I think.
So, Bill, we don't always get a chance to talk to you across the table here in our studio. You're usually on the other side interviewing guests, as you have for many, many years here on WTBR. And people who listen to the station on a regular basis know you as the longtime host of the show. But you got other things going on. You do a lot of different things. And you've got a book, and I happen to have a paperback copy of it here, called Youth at Risk, Suggestions for Parents and Others Working with Today's Teens. Fantastic. And what I want to ask you is, give us a little more of your background, because, you know, again, people may know you as the host of the program. They might know you in the community and the other things you do. They may not know you as an author of this kind of work. So tell us what in your background led up to writing a book like this.
Well, I came back from Vietnam, mm-hmm. and I got an associate degree from the finest institution, I believe, in the United States, Berkshire Community College.
Yeah.
And went on the Lanesboro Police Department and worked my way up there to acting chief when the chief had a heart issue. Mm. But also, Chief McCormick was kind of a prophet before people. We were having some juvenile issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when I was a patrol officer.
And this is what era now are we talking about?
76.
Okay.
76.
So juvenile issues have not just appeared recently. This is something that we've been dealing with for a long, long time in society.
Long time. And I will tell you, the difference is the level.
Mm-hmm.
I would get called for kids with firecrackers.
Uh-huh.
The most serious crime was a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the second most serious was, I pulled up on a young couple, ready, smoking marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can buy it at any store.
That's
but,
right.
But I don't know what made me do this, but I knew their families.
Mm-hmm.
I brought them home, and I sat in living rooms, two living rooms.
And this is as a Lanesboro police officer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and watched their parents devastated,
mm-hmm.
cry.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, they were crying.
Mm.
And I saw redemption. I saw forgiveness. And I think, and I pretty much stayed up. I left the Lanesboro. I came to Pittsfield. I worked in the SIU, Special Investigations Unit.
Mm-hmm.
Then both my wife and I was put on notice that I may be laid off. Mm. And she was laid off under Proposition 2.5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the big deck clearing, right?
Oh, yeah. Clean house.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and some people will say that, you know, we really have never recovered from the effects of Proposition 2.5, even 40-something years later.
Yeah. So I left, and we left, and I had an opportunity. I went to Arizona. I worked in the Arizona Department of Corrections
mm-hmm.
in the training division because I had a master's degree at that time. And
where was your master's degree from?
Goddard College.
Mm-hmm.
And then in criminal justice administration. And then we moved from there to Leavenworth, Kansas. And we had a wonderful time.
Now, what's Leavenworth known for?
Prisons. All kinds of prisons.
Is that what attracted you to Leavenworth?
Yeah, a job opportunity.
Okay.
But then I actually started consulting for the Department of Justice. And I taught... in their academy, at least, I taught management, training, and supervision for 27 years. But in the interim, I got to consult under NIC, National Institute of Corrections, for various states, and then all of a sudden...
So that's a career in itself. I'll stop you there. 27 years of doing that.
Yeah.
That's a major chunk of anyone's professional life.
Well, right now I am a major chunk. But seriously, then I went all over the world. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity through them, through the government. I was 3 years back and forth in South Africa during the transition, Mandela transition. I was in, Billy Clinton sent me to Haiti, not personally, but to do some.
He liked you that much.
Yeah.
He sent you to Haiti.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to vote for him. seriously, he was trying to do a good job. So I worked in Haiti, the Netherlands, like I said, South Africa.
Was it generally in the criminal justice area
always,
that you were doing?
Yeah, all in the criminal justice. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and I have a picture I should have brought. Well, I have a hard enough time getting in the door. But I have one of my most, you know how you have possessions that you hold on to? Mine is the official Nelson Mandela portrait that was given to me when I left for the last time.
Wow.
And that's right in my office. So every time I think of leadership, I think of Nelson Mandela.
Hmm.
He was truly a leader.
Yeah. And for someone, I'm thinking 27 years also rings true for how much time Nelson Mandela spent in prison.
Yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
But they never crushed his spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I co-authored a couple of books. Dr. Barry Glick, who endorsed the back of this book. Let me show the cover.
Yeah, there
you can buy it on Amazon.
We can't say that. We can only say you can buy it at wherever you shop for books.
Yeah. Okay. But anyhow, Dr. Glick and I wrote two books. After the National Institute of Corrections, if you remember, I'm thinking the early 90s, there was a big surge in violent youthful crime.
Hmm.
And they started changing the laws and adjudicating juveniles, adults, and sending them to the penitentiary.
Hmm.
Well,
and that was controversial at the time, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that would say that that's the right thing to do if the juveniles are going to commit crimes that are so serious, so heinous, that they're more like adult crimes, then you have to prosecute them like adults. But is that correct in your view?
No.
Okay.
There has to be, and I think now more and more, even now, all these years later, I just was reading they're going to adjudicate some other kids and send them. But what I believe they need, nobody's called me, but if you do, here's what I believe. There needs to be a separation between juvenile, blank, adult.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in the blank. And the blank should be recovery, assessment, and because, let me backtrack a little bit. Remember Google when it first came out?
My memory is good, yes. I do remember Google.
You do good. anyhow, but I've put in Google search, and I've had Google search for all these years, and that's how I've kept up with what's going on in the juvenile world.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was pulled to go into counterterrorism after 9/11.
Hmm.
So I've written a couple of books, with Dr. Francesca Spina.
Mm-hmm.
On terrorists and prisons. That's major recruiting place for them.
Right.
I don't want to go too far off base here. But anyhow.
But suffice to say, the books that you've written, and this is not your first book, Youth at Risk, that's what we're talking about today, have centered around criminal justice themes.
That's it.
Things that you've worked in your entire life.
Yeah, no one's ever hired me to write a book about love story.
Have you considered doing a romance novel?
Yeah. Let me check at home.
Okay.
Anyhow, but all kidding aside, so the first two, the Department of Justice, through the National Institute of Corrections, assembled a group of people juvenile, kind of civilianish types, mm-hmm. and adult corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Glick was kind of the head of it. He is a, and we developed a curriculum, for lack of a better term,
mm-hmm.
for juveniles adjudicated to adult prisons.
Mm.
Now, obviously, you had two fractions that are way apart had to come together to do that. And I had the great pleasure, and I mean this, I didn't think so always at the time, but I had the great pleasure of going to South Carolina and under the director of the late, great Mike Moore, implementing the program as director and critiquing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of this book came from. I took a lot of notes. I, even though I had been in the criminal justice system, was blown away when some of these offenders came into the system as teenagers with horrendous crimes.
Mm.
So, but I made a point, and it wasn't always easy. I made a point of sitting and interviewing every one of them. Now, some of them had a pretty lengthy time in juvie,
mm-hmm.
juvenile hall. Now, all of a sudden, it was like going to graduate school.
So these kids that you're, and I'm saying kids,
yeah.
What ages are these folks that you're?
They were, you know, 16, mm-hmm. probably 18.
Mm. And they'd already been in the prison system for how long at that point?
Well, juvenile. Some of them had done 2-3 years in juvie or
okay.
more.
Mm-hmm.
But when they came here, it was like graduate school. Orientation, boundaries, consequences, mm-hmm. structure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them never had that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked because I, you know, look at me, I'm an old man. I'm going to be over 21 here pretty soon. But I had all that. And so I don't criticize parents because this is a new era. And it was an era with the onset, not always here yet, the onset of the cell phone and technology. And so, but I've kept up with it ever since then. I often think of some of the ones, I break them into three categories. Those who were really parental guidance, parental anything wasn't present.
Mm.
Those that came from good homes but ran in with a bad crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of me saintly Irish mother, as long as we're on the program here. Me saintly Irish mother said, just remember this, Willie boy. You'll be judged by the people you hang around with. So I won't be seen again. And third was, I don't have to do that. I'm privileged.
Mm-hmm.
And
so more oppositional, defiant.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know who my father is?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyhow... So we had this program, we implemented it, and it was built around that more so. Understanding, structure, consequences, and we'll talk about that a little later on. And again,
these are things that are being implemented once the people are behind bars. They're in the prison system as
right.
juveniles.
Right.
So this is a way to, because at some point, as we know, people that are behind bars are going to be released. They're going to be back in society, right?
Yeah,
and
Willie.
So, yeah, most likely. I mean, that's the statistic,
yeah.
right? There's
yeah.
very few
oh, yeah.
that just stay in
yeah.
prison for
yeah.
the rest of their lives and,
yeah.
and won't be back in society. So I would imagine the idea that the kind of structure and the kind of help that you can give at that time
yeah.
helps them and helps the rest of society when they do come back out. What are they going to be like? How are they going to contribute to society? What kind of things can you help build that weren't built by the time they got in there, right?
What? Yeah, exactly right. And one of the things that jumps right to the front of my head, and by now you know it's a long trip, is that so many of them, a great percentage, had IEPs.
Mm-hmm.
So they were experiencing issues in learning in school. And one kid, I share this for teachers, and my wife taught, so please don't send hate mail to Sean. That one kid shared with me, and I want to share it. He said, you know, I knew I wasn't going to pass that test. I knew, and if it was anything where it was like you had to stand up and present or something,
mm-hmm.
right?
A lot of pressure to do that.
They would do something stupid and get kicked out of class.
Mm.
It was a survival. Mm-hmm. And let me just caveat that word, survival. Much of their behavior, much of their responses was survival.
Mm-hmm.
They've used this to survive. Now, I know people will push back. Let me caveat this, not caveat. The caveat of that, Leslie. Let me caveat that. I'm not a psychologist, sociologist, social worker. I'm a former practicing criminal justice person,
mm-hmm.
practitioner, criminal justice right. practitioner. I'm viewing it from my side and what I saw and what I ascertained as some serious issues.
And what do you expect or hope that people will get out of the book? Because that's the other side, right?
Yeah,
so your side is to see what works and what didn't and what kind of structure can be put in place. What do you hope when people read Youth at Risk that they can take away from that?
Techniques, the most important, I think, not the most, but serious, listen. You know, a lot of people have helped me with this book. District Attorney Shagrew, we had a conversation. It's not in the book, but from our conversation, I extrapolated it.
Mm-hmm.
Is make time to listen to your kids.
Mm.
You know, and they don't have to talk to you through a cell phone. And
it's becoming harder and harder to make those connections, even
yes.
within families, right? We kind of
yes.
had a discussion about that before we
yep.
went on the air, how difficult that is for the adults now,
right.
but for kids having the devices and having social media,
yep.
it really is a different world in terms of communicating.
War story.
Mm.
We're at a restaurant in Pittsfield, the Polish princess and I, that's my wife, and in comes a family of five, three kiddos, a mom and dad. They ordered, sat down, they ordered, and next thing you know, here they are.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Nobody talked to each other the entire time.
Yeah.
And D.A. Shagrew, a guy I must say this to, he understands because he's been on both sides of the bar. He
mm-hmm.
was a prosecutor and a defense attorney.
Right. That's true.
And his juvenile diversion program is probably one of the best I've seen in the world.
Mm.
So, Barry Glick, as I mentioned, I learned so much from him about how to assess. And when the kids would talk to me, basically, Sean, this book, got it. There it is. No,
you can see it on radio.
So, oh, good. Yeah. All right.
We have the technology.
Oh, really? You know, when I was here doing this show, they made me wear mittens, so I didn't touch any of the buttons. But this is the kids. Here was my, when I was sit there, how do you think you got here? That would be my first question.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do while you're here?
Mm-hmm.
Now.
And I would imagine their outlook was pretty dim at that point, right?
Yes.
Or did they think that they were going to be out quickly and that was nothing that is going to happen here matters?
I had one kiddo say to me, you know, my father's got the best lawyer and he's guaranteed me he'll have me out. And I said, well, I'll guarantee you'll get out too in 15 years. But the bottom line is it's different. You know, I'll never forget when Elvis Presley came on the Ed Sullivan Show. I know you don't remember, but my father made me get up and change the channel. because he said those gyrations changed that channel. Now, I mean, that would be nothing today.
Yeah.
But we are an evolution of a generation. Unfortunately, I think some of the areas, technology, the family, the parenting, social changes, and how so many kiddos and their families look at education. And
yeah, that's all evolving right now.
Yeah, and it's
every one of those points you just made. And sometimes it feels like parents are the ones sometimes left behind, right? The world is moving forward without them, and they're running back to catch up. And you know, sometimes the old ways don't work anymore when you've got, you know, kids that are in the, in their lives in a new modern generation.
Exactly.
They're dealing with different things than the parents had to deal with, and the parents don't have that background to say, how am I supposed to deal with this?
Right. And not only that, the parents don't understand the technology, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, there's certain things like don't let your kiddos have technology in their bedroom so that they go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because I interacted with a mom here whose son all of a sudden couldn't get up for school. Well, because he was on his computer or his phone all night.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of things. Another, the level of bullying and the cyberbullying and pop up this and pop up that.
Mm-hmm.
Parents today really have to interact with their kids. They really have to interact. And solicit, where are you going tonight? And who are you going? You know, my son, who's now 50, can't be right. I got to check that birth certificate. One time I was in my chair watching TV, and he yelled in from the other room, "Dad, I can't go to that party tonight, can I?" "No." So after he came in, I said, "What was all that about?" "There's some people going, I found out there's some people going to be going to that party that can only be trouble."
Mm.
So he used me. It's his code.
Mm-hmm.
And they do speak in code today. And just listen to them.
Yeah.
It
can seem like a monumental task, though, right, for parents to get into that mindset and to you really have to, you know, put in the time and effort not only to communicate and to ask those questions.
Yes.
But then also to understand the technology and
have
to
explain it.
Understand what they're going
technology.
Through. Like, I think, you know, you mentioned cyberbullying.
Yeah.
And bullying itself is not a new thing, right?
No.
I mean, anyone who went to middle school knows what what bullying is,
right? I went to North Junior High.
Right. but now it's amplified, right?
Yeah.
Because things are moving so much faster and the technology exists. So, you know, it's more than passing a note in school.
Yeah.
It's more than, you know, talking behind someone's back at recess or whatever it was that, you know, quaint little things that we had to deal with early on. Those days are over, and things travel at the speed of light now. And there are things that, and, you know, we've talked about this on the program before.
Yeah.
How you even know that there are problems brewing and where that's going to pop up next. I would imagine that makes running a school, for example, a very difficult thing.
Well, and the thing, too, is, let's face it, the respect for these are some of the societal changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, my mother used to say, if ever you get lost, go to a policeman. Right? That's what she
mm-hmm.
told us.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear that today. You run from the policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And same in schools. I mean, we respected teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't, the administration had some say.
Sure.
I have to tell you this story before the break. I had a young fella that told me he was very proud of it. I interviewed him, and he said, "Bo," he said, "you know, I was a behavioral problem in school." Because I said to him, "What's the?" He saw him, I was a behavioral problem, and I had detention every day. I could not leave the school until 4:30.
Hmm.
And I said to him, you sound like you're proud of it. And he goes, well, not really. I said, well, why did you want detention? My goal was to get out of school, right? And he said, well, my mother was a crack dealer.
Mm.
So the safest place, and I tell teachers this, mm-hmm. the safest place in my life was school.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and once you hear that information, now something clicks, right? Now you
hopefully
realize.
Hopefully it'll open up.
Right. Right.
You know, we'll wait till after the break.
Yeah, let's do that because we're at the top of the hour here and we're talking with Bill Sturgeon, the alumni host of Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR.
That means
FM.
Old.
it's a euphemism. book he has written is called Youth at Risk, Suggestions for Parents and Others Working with Today's Teens. And we got more to talk about with Bill and the book. I want to know what went into the writing of it and more of the sort of in-depth stuff of what people can get out of reading it. We'll talk about all of that and more on the second half of the program when we return here on Morning Drive. In just a moment, we'll take that break and we'll see you on the other side. Here we go.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM. You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP is hiring an Assistive Technology Regional Center Program Manager to lead a dynamic program that helps individuals with disabilities gain greater independence and access to their communities. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
For over four decades, Berkshire AHEC has been serving the health education needs of Berkshire County. We offer Massachusetts food allergen training, the Berkshire AHEC Health Scholars Program at BCC, medical interpreter training, and the Tobacco-Free Community Partnership. For more information, visit our website, berkshireahec.org, or call us at 413-842-5160. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
All aboard!
Do you like hard rock and heavy metal music?
Oh, yeah!
Well, then join me here Friday nights from 8 to 10 for Wounded Radio. Every Friday night, I play 2 hours of the best music on the planet, from AC/DC to ZZ Top and everything in between.
This is going to be cool.
Want to hear a song on Wounded Radio? Request it on the Wounded Radio Facebook page. And join me here Friday nights at 8 for Wounded Radio.
Yeah!
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to the program here, Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR, Lee Lennox in Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app or on channel 1301 Access Pittsfield. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on the 3rd of September. And we're talking with Bill Sturgeon about his most recent book, Youth at Risk. Lots more to talk about with Bill on that in just a moment. First, one more look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service and see what we've got in store for us. Kind of a gray morning I'm seeing out there, but at about 65 degrees or so outside. It's not anything cold just yet on the 3rd of September. Let's hear what we've got in store.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, showers likely. Near steady temperature in the lower 60s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Chance of rain 70%. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon. Humid with highs in the upper 70s. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour, becoming west in the afternoon. Chance of rain 50%. Thursday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. Not such a bad couple of days. We've got a chance of showers over the next couple of days, but nothing, no washouts. And then I hear a nice Labor Day weekend, some nice temperatures in the high 70s to around 80. That'll be nice. We deserve that.
We do, and I, kind of an upbeat, downbeat thing, pro, con. I've noticed some trees changing.
I certainly have as well. Yeah, it's around around this time, late August, early September, you start to see the indications of what we've got coming up. Yeah. And hopefully we have a nice, colorful fall.
The beauty season of the Berkshires.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bill, Youth at Risk book, how long did it take you to write this?
Well, to actually write about 3 years. Mm. The research and a lot of the research and what's contained in it, I've been accumulating since the early 90s.
Wow.
And
but to put pen to paper or whatever, keyboard strokes, took you a good three years.
Because, again, I was doing it sporadically, too, you know. But I felt committed, not for myself, but for all the youth that I had interacted with through my years. Mm-hmm. Their story in some way needed to be told so that parents and kids know today they're not the first ones. Mm-hmm. And here's a way of maybe cutting it off, you know?
Some things have changed, but some things are also similar than they have been over the years, right? There are still risk factors that you can identify.
Yeah.
And what are some of those?
Well, risk factors, before that, if I may, slide back.
Yeah.
Boundaries. You know, consequences. Mm-hmm. Boundaries. Structure. We noticed as a collective team in the Violent Youthful Offender Program, this was an anomaly to them, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, why do I have to do that? Because we said to. Make your bed, do some little things.
By the time these kids are in their early teens, let's say, and they haven't had a life with those kind of structures in place, with those kind of boundaries, how difficult is it to go back and introduce those, and how successful can that be to preventing, you know, future problems, to say that, hey, this is something that will be beneficial to you if you can get that ingrained?
It's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to kid you. It was difficult in a confined prison setting.
Mm-hmm. And that's not obviously the ideal setting for a lot of this, right? I mean, it'd be great if some of this was addressed before they were introduced to the prison system. Or got into the trouble that they got into. That would have been the better time. But now that's your only choice, and so you're working through that.
Well, think back when you were, and I say this to parents, think back, but remember, those days have changed. Mm-hmm. So how can you adjust? Like my father and mother used to say, when the street lights come on, be home. Things like that. Mm-hmm. My mother, who are you? You'll be judged by who you associate with things. Mm-hmm. And I had responsibilities. Now, I understand, too, parenting today is a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
One of my parents was always home. My mother, if she wasn't working, was home.
Mm-hmm.
And they schedule that. Now, I know people can't do that. So what do you do? The way I... My suggestion is delegate little things for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing
I'm of a generation. I'm in the Generation X category.
Yeah.
We were known as latchkey kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that was something in your generation. I suspect it probably wasn't. That basically there were a lot more responsibility was thrown at us at an earlier age. Basically, you get off the school bus, you got your key, you let yourself in, and here's what you're going to do
exactly
in the 2 hours before I get home.
There's an evolution.
Right.
I went from my having a snack when I got home to you, a latchkey kid. Mm-hmm. Now, the parents text or call. How do I want to say this? One of the ones that is stuck right here, stuck right here, and believe me, by now you know a lot doesn't stick there. Don't threaten. Act.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, if I had a dollar for every kid, I'd be able to stop at Friendly's on the way home and get something to eat. That said to me, even in the joint, don't threaten me, I don't give it. Well, you know, dude, this isn't a threat.
Mm-hmm.
This is reality here. I don't know what happened. I think too often we do that. Mm. We say, if you do that again, I'm going to blah, blah, blah.
So in other words, a hollow threat.
Exactly.
Like there's one thing that it's a threat that you know
exactly.
that something's going to be followed up on and that there's going to be a consequence. But after a while, if a threat continues and nothing happens, then they know that it doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't. And how often?
And we're not talking about threatening violence. We're talking about consequences for the actions that you take.
Yeah. That's some of them have been doomed because their whole life has been built around violence.
Right. Which is never... generationally handed down from
generation to generation.
And it didn't work in the previous generations, and it doesn't work in these generations.
And it breaks my heart. It broke my heart to sit there and listen to some of them relive their violence, relive the alcoholism or the drug addiction in the family.
Mm-hmm.
War story. Yeah. Kid says... he said, well, I started drinking when I was about 14. I remember it distinctly. I said, oh, what? Well, my father told me to go upstairs and get my piggy bank. And I did. And he broke it. And he said, now, let's go get some beer. I'll share it with you. And I said, well, what'd you? Well, he said, I knew my father drank too much. But a war story that I think needed to be told for that kiddo. Right, I don't know where he is now. God love him.
But those are the kind of things that you have to get that story first, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in that position trying to help a youthful offender who's already in the system, there are probably some themes that you're picking up, right?
Yeah.
That you hear constantly from different people. But then... each one of those stories is unique and different, and unless you're inside that story of knowing where that person came from and why they're there and what they did, what previously happened to them that led them to that, you can't really help them, right?
You have to get to the core issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't. Sometimes, and I'm an old cop. I'm a criminal justice. Sometimes you have to have the patience of a saint. And the other Pete, and you have to listen. And they'll dance around the merry-go-round before they tell you the story.
Well, sure.
And the other thing is this.
And why is that? Why do you think they dance around it?
Survival.
Is it too painful to deal with?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I had an officer come up and say to me, that kid just lied to me, bold-faced lied to me. I said, I know. What are you going to do about it? Well, I said, we're going to bring him in. We're going to talk to him about truth.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, to that kid, he's watched lying become a survival mechanism that he's used and probably was taught to use. And when we brought him in, I said, why'd you lie to us? We saw the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
We got cameras. and he said, well, I don't know. I lied in the past. Lying's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is a big deal. And that's what you have to show them. Well, obviously, if you've been 4 years old and people have been lying to you, you're now 17, pretty ingrained. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, and I don't, before we run out of time, I think it's so important. Don't set the bar too high, because I don't want to use the word baby steps, but progress and real progress, because these kids have been through the root, and mm-hmm. they'll call you up. If you make a big deal because he tied his shoes, he'll know right away you're malarkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say, oh, yeah, that was good, dude.
So break up one larger task, something, a huge goal that seems that you can accomplish it.
Yeah.
Break it up into things that each one of those steps can be accomplished.
And then,
which is good advice for a lot of people in trying to get things done in their own lives.
Yeah.
But that is just human nature. Looking at something as too big, you just can't accomplish it. So you say, well, I'll never do that.
Right. And so often I've seen kiddos get to a point and then they stumble. Okay. I mean, let's not crucify them because mm-hmm. they stumbled. Mm-hmm. They've been great for 6 months. They had an altercation, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But act.
Mm-hmm.
Don't threaten. Act. Say, listen, kind of messed up. I'm not going to. Don't set the bar too high. Say, listen, let's try to get through another week without an altercation.
Yeah.
Because for some of them, they had altercations every day, sometimes more than one.
Right. And all of this obviously has implications for parents, for school systems.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how do you deal with kids that are disruptive in class? It's a very, very difficult thing, and it obviously informs next steps in people's lives. These are kids that are not fully formed adults yet, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of what you're talking about here.
Absolutely.
When you're talking about youth at risk, you're talking about people that, young people who don't have the full script yet.
Right.
And they're still building it. And maybe they, you know, got the short shrift at the beginning through no fault of their own in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
The abuse or the neglect or whatever that came with that. And then you're trying to sort of build that script back up in that very critical time period of the teenage years before something happens that you experienced a lot of in your professional career of seeing those kids come into the system.
Yeah, and you know, another contributor, two contributors to the book that I think really added a great deal. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Dr. Michael Fabrizio, he was a pediatrician here. His scope of looking at traumatic brain injury, trauma, and its evolution, I think he adds a great deal to the book.
That's something that's very much in the news right now, even with the NFL, you know, dealing with the CTE problem and concussion protocols and things where we look back and we say, we can't believe that all these football players took all these hits for all these years. And it's big surprise that they end up being, you know, violent in their end, or they, you know, died early, and then they've did the autopsy and found out that their brains were just riddled with CTE.
Yeah.
Those are things that we didn't know 50 years ago.
No, he didn't. And you know, with Dr. Fabrizio, he practiced, I could have the time, but about 46 years. And he saw the evolution. All the stuff we're talking about, he lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think he was such a big contributor. The other person who contributed to the book was Mark McNeese, who is an actual survivor of traumatic brain injury that cost him like years of his life messing up and nobody ever diagnosing it and saying, and I think we need to do that. If you get, my belief, if you get sent to a juvenile facility or a correctional, a young adult facility or an old adult correctional facility, you should be tested. Now, I know it's costly, but so's keeping somebody in prison all their life. Mm-hmm. And that's the argument I use. Traumatic brain injury, trauma, childhood trauma. And when you talk to, like, Dr. Fabrizio and you talk to people like Mark McNeese, I knew somebody like that. I knew. So it's not an anomaly. It's a reality. And a lot of the young people that I dealt with have had head trauma. Let's just leave it at that. Not just from their peers, from their parents. And that, again, I'm not making excuses. And I used to tell them, hey, listen, what you did, you did.
Yeah.
Now we got to make sure you don't do it again.
Right. Well, I don't think it's an excuse to say that what you're trying to do is find out what the origin of the behavior is or why things happen the way they happen. It's fair to say that unless you understand those things, unless you go back and you say, okay, what led to this? It's not just out of the blue, you decided with your own free will to go and do something. There's got to be something else that led up to it. I think of the big trial right now going on in Eastern Mass that everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if you didn't understand, postpartum you know, psychosis, depression, you know, it's not fair to say that you know the whole story, that you just want to make a decision to say, this is what happened because she knew what she was doing or whatever, right? And some similarities I'm hearing between that, where you need to understand at least what's going on. You can still make a decision and a judgment at the end of that, but without knowing those factors, you're really cutting off part of the story.
The other thing I found is not to be so confrontational. That's a lie. Well, he knows that, or she knows that, but you don't have to hit him over the head with it. You know, and say, well, you know what? I'm not buying it. Or remember, you're trying to set up a bridge, a communication bridge with them. Because they're many of the ones that I dealt with were very familiar of being questioned, interrogated. And so.
So they've been through that already.
Yes. So my thing was, I can't help you till I can get to you. And I don't know if that's right in the big world of psychology or what, but I've had it work. I'm seeing it work.
And sometimes it just takes time.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with very unique individuals. There's not a cookie cutter factory that's stamping out kids, right? And they're all the same, and everything works the same on every kid. You really have to know who your kids are, what they respond to. And what works for them. And if you don't know, you need to go back and learn more, right?
And I would say this, and I throw this out as we get close. Become involved with your kids' education. Now, how do you do that? Well, I'll tell you how my mother did it. When we came home, we had a snack, and we did our homework. Then we could go play. I know there are those, and I don't know how to say this. I know there are those families and those kiddos who don't have any belief in education. But I want to say, it's got nothing to do with this program, thank God for Taconic. Because there were a lot of kids, and you probably went to school with them, and they weren't that good mathematically, but they were unbelievable with their hands. And that was their desire to work with their hands.
Sure.
So to the people who had the vision to build Taconic, thank you. Because I will tell you right now, I think every juvenile facility in the country should have a Taconic-type vocational technical education piece rather than just GED.
And just instilling the idea that lifelong education is important, right? That,
absolutely.
You know, how many different careers did you have? And you didn't have to stop learning once you learned everything you needed to know for life, right? And then you just use it. That doesn't exist. People have three or four different careers in their lifetimes now, and they constantly have to learn. So You know, keeping that alive in a young person,
yeah.
Also knowing that, you know, you got plenty more to learn, and even older people got plenty to learn.
I just found out about a person who was a teacher for several years, is now working for a big bank in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Just a change. You're right. So it's not like people. My father
and different skill sets, right?
Yes.
As you mentioned, different strengths that everybody has. No cookie cutter.
No.
So you find out what you're good at. You find out what you can bring to the table.
Yeah.
And that also what lights a spark under you. The things that are interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe you know, early in life, some of these kids that you describe in the book. Maybe they didn't get that opportunity to explore or to find what they think is going to be workable, special for them. And some of this, you know, connects to the current atmosphere that we have in Pittsfield. We had kind of a difficult summer with shootings and gun violence and things like that. So that must obviously resonate with you, knowing that these are some young folks. There was a juvenile that was just arrested yesterday in the news we saw. For the Circular Ave shooting, for example. So, you know, what kinds of things that you have in this book apply to somebody like that?
Well, right now, we have, and I shouldn't speak. I'm not in the flow anymore.
Sure.
But
yeah.
From my past experience, I would say we have an issue of gangs, drugs, and guns.
Mm-hmm.
This young man, he's committed a pretty serious crime.
Yep.
And so now I think they need to bring him in. And what do you do?
What's his outlook, you think, when he gets into the system, if he's committed that level of crime at a young age before 18?
I think the DA may move to adjudicate him an adult.
Mm.
Some states are easier than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more people are understanding, well, wait a minute, but we need to retune and retool the juvenile justice system for the 21st century juveniles.
Mm-hmm.
We're still sometimes operating back in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know?
Very different.
Again, if I had my way, every juvenile facility, when I was in junior high, we also had academics, but we had shop. And a lot of people of my age, when they went to PHS, they didn't follow the academic. They went into vocational or technical.
Right.
And
just a different pathway.
And
they were available, and that's what you have to do, right, is continue to make
opinion. Those
different pathways available. Bill Sturgeon, we've got about a minute left.
Yeah.
Last thoughts on the book, on writing it, on so many different parts of your career, looking back.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
This is the book, and I wanted their words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm an old man, got some issues health-wise, and I wanted to get it out, not for my sake, but for the parents of today. And the one thing we have to kind of do away with is, don't be so judgmental, be creative. And stop. One thing that used to drive me, well, they're just kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they shot somebody.
Mm. Yeah.
But let's put on our 21st century hat. Let's deal with technology. Let's become involved in our kiddos' lives. Communicate. Please listen to your kids. And lastly, and I'll be quiet, control their use of technology.
Mm.
Don't let them keep their stuff in their bedrooms. Everybody in the world is saying that. This isn't Bill Sturgeon.
Yep.
And I shut my phone off. Nobody calls.
I think a lot of us could take that advice to heart, and even the adults have to think about what the impact the technology is having on their personal lives, their social lives, everything. Bill Sturgeon, great to have you on the program and to talk about your book, Youth at Risk. We need a good old morning drive sign-off.
All I can tell you is have a wonderful day, and remember, each day is a gift, and time is... Here's a Bill Sturgeon exact. Time is the currency of life. Spend it wisely, for it cannot be saved, yet it can be invested in people and projects. Have a great life.
That's the way to be. Thank you, Bill Sturgeon. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean.
Great having you on the show. Everybody have a good rest of the day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you, Sean.